The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, friends, it's me again. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. If you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in and give me a thumb. Say hi while you're at it. Helps me a ton with that damn algorithm. And besides, it's always nice to see you there. All right then, let's hop on that crazy train.
All aboard!
Hey, welcome back, my friends. Pleased to have you with me here on Good Friday. And for those of you who don't observe that kind of thing, happy Fish Fingers and Custard Day. Fish Fingers and Custard. Come on, is anything sacred to these people? Can't you be solemn for one damn night? I mean, does everything have to be a party? Yeah, at least they're sticking to fish. Good point, Chester. But still, custard? Ah. Anyway, come on in, friend. I've got a fishy story for you tonight. All right. Well, check out simplyscarypodcast.com and maybe become a patron. For as little as $7.99 a month, you get their entire catalog ad-free and available to download or stream. It's a good way to show your support, and you get a whole lot for it. Also, it's going to help keep operations running around here while they fight the whole demonetization bullshit. Also, check out patreon.com/DrewBlood2 if you get a chance. Buy your pal some fish sticks. That Gordon Fisherman guy is a real chiseler. Did I mention we've got mugs? Well, anyway, tonight we welcome Ryan G. Peacock, courtesy of our pals at Velox Books. In this one, we join a fisherman on his way out to Ash Bay for the haul of a lifetime. Needless to say, the waters get a little choppy. So without further delay, y'all, from author Ryan G. Peacock, I give you, I can never return to the ocean. I've been a fisherman for a very long time. It's what I know. All I know. I'll confess, it's probably not the most glamorous job that a man can have. But if you know what you're doing, you can earn a living. I always figured I'd use my youth to make as much money as possible, save up a substantial nest egg, and then retire early. Find myself a wife, maybe have a few kids, and find some other work. As plans go, mine wasn't bad, and it wasn't anything that I hadn't seen other guys like me pull off before. The difference between me and them, though, was Ash Bay. If you've never heard of it, I'm not surprised. Ash Bay is something of a hidden gem along a quiet stretch of coastline in eastern Canada. I won't say exactly where for reasons that will become clear later, but if you're really that determined, it's not that hard to find. Not a lot of people seem to fish the waters around here, though. They generally go out much further, and as a result, you usually see only local ships in the 30 to 50 mile stretch between Ash Bay and the deeper parts of the Atlantic. It's always easy to tell which ships are local, too. They're usually smaller fishing trawlers, but that's not what makes them distinct. No, what makes them stand out is the markings on the bottom hull. White painted swirls and patterns. You can always see the tops of them extending just over the water. I never quite understood why they did that. I also never understood why I only ever saw the Ash Bay ships out in that stretch of water. Everyone else just seemed to avoid that particular area. I always figured that there was just nothing to catch. Then, of course, I started hearing the stories of the hauls of fish that people in that area were bringing in. I think the first person who told me about it was a guy I'd hired a couple of years back. He had worked in Ash Bay for a few years and only recently left to be closer to his family. But the way he told it, those waters were absolutely teeming with fish. And the ships out that way only needed to head out for a week or so before coming back with a full hold. Anywhere else, you would have been out at sea for at least a month or so. I vaguely recall thinking that he was bullshitting me at the time, but it wasn't long before he convinced me to visit the area. Any doubts I had were gone by the end of the day. The waters were teeming with fish. I filled my hold in no time at all, and when I went out again, I wasted no time in heading back out there. The waters of Ash Bay did not disappoint. They never have. I thought I was being smart by packing up and moving out to Ash Bay. By the time I had made the move, I'd already been fishing around those waters for the better part of a year, and figured that I might as well save myself the fuel I'd been wasting by sailing out that way for so long. I'd been turning a pretty profit ever since I'd started fishing in the area, so cutting out the fuel expense just made sense. Even before I made the move, I was aware of the peculiarities of the locals, but I didn't think much of them. What town doesn't have a few odd quirks? Peculiarities were to be expected, especially in a place where most of the population consisted of sailors and fishermen. Anyone who's spent enough time on the water can tell you that we're a superstitious lot, and Ash Bay was a little more superstitious than most, especially when it came to the Stone Lady. During one of my early visits, before I had decided to move there, I'd seen the Stone Lady down by the harbor. She was a weathered statue depicting the torso of a nude woman that had been eroded by decades, if not centuries, of exposure to the elements. Moss had grown over much of the stone, covering her arms and most of her hair. She reminded me a little bit of that old painting, The Birth of Venus, or an old ship's figurehead. Though it was hard to make out any of her worn features clearly, she had clearly once been a beautiful woman with a crown of reeds around her head. Delicately carved waves seemed to rise up around her legs, and as far as I could tell, her eyes were closed. The look carved onto her face was one of peace and serenity. At a glance, I might have thought she belonged in a museum as opposed to being exposed to the elements by the coast. But just looking at her, it was clear that she was a source of reverence to the locals and didn't belong anywhere else but where she was. There were countless flowers laid at the base of the statue, and countless beaded necklaces adorned its neck, each of them lovingly handcrafted. The statue sat within its own stone circle, not touched by anything else. It presented itself like an altar, although the significance of it all was lost on me at the time. It wasn't until after the move that I ever got the chance to ask anyone about it. David Scriver had lived in Ash Bay his entire life. Just by looking at the man, I knew that he knew his way around the trawler, and we hit it off quickly. Most of my old crew wasn't interested in following me to a new town, so I'd started looking for help before I finished moving in. Scriver had been one of the first men who had answered my job posting, and we had agreed to meet for a beer at a local pub. One beer quickly turned into three or four. and we'd gotten to talking when I'd asked him about the statue down by the harbor.
"Right, the goddess of the sea," he'd asked. "It's something of a local superstition. I'm not sure if you've noticed, but the folks around here put a lot of stock into that kind of thing. Generally, the tradition is that before you go out, you give an offering to the statue of the goddess to ensure your safe return. Beads or flowers, usually. Mostly it's the wives and the children who do it. But I've known a few men who will make their own beaded necklaces while they're ashore and bring them to the statue the morning before they cast off." "I take it you don't put much stock in it?" I asked. Scriver was quiet for a moment before he answered. He took a thoughtful swig of his beer. Never been entirely sure what I thought of it, honestly. But it never hurts to feel like you've stacked the odds in your favor, does it?"
"I suppose not. What about those markings on the hulls of the boats? Does that have anything to do with the goddess?" The smile he had been wearing a few moments back faded and was replaced by a more serious look.
"Yes and no. I've heard a few different answers from a few different people. My dad believed that the markings were so that if the goddess ever looks up, she knows that you're a friend. Otherwise, she might take offense to someone trespassing in her waters and sink the ship. Someone else said it was to help the boat stay afloat. Most versions I've heard are variations of the first one. Which reminds me, we should see about getting your hull painted."
I hadn't expected him to bring up painting the hull, so it caught me a little by surprise. "What for?"
"Well, like I said, never hurts to stack the odds in your favor."
Scriver took a pull on his beer.
"I suppose, but I don't really see the point. I've been fishing in these waters for about a year or so now. I've done just fine without using whatever pattern you folks have on your hulls."
"So far. I can't force you, but you'll have an easier time getting men on your boat if it's painted. Maybe it's just superstition. Maybe not. Either way, what have you got to lose?"
I let myself think it over for a moment. It's not like it would have impacted the performance of the boat or anything, although having it hauled out of the water and painted to satisfy some superstition that wasn't my own seemed like a bit more hassle than I wanted to put up with.
"We'd have a hell of a time getting that done before we head out. Don't get me wrong, I don't mind if you're the superstitious sort. That'd be a hell of an expense, though."
"I just think of it as a safety precaution."
His tone was blunt and matter-of-fact. I shook my head and took another swig of my beer.
Maybe when we come back to port, we've got some more money to spend. Right now, it seems like a bit more trouble than it's worth."
I could tell that Scriver didn't like that answer, but he wasn't about to get in my face over a fairy tale. Still, it only felt right to cut him a bit of slack. Sailors and fishermen are a superstitious lot. This wasn't the strangest thing I'd heard them do to stack the odds of coming home alive in their favor. "I'll make an offering to the statue if it'll set your mind at ease. And when we come back, we'll talk about painting the hull some more." Scriver nodded.
"It'll do,"
he said, although he didn't sound quite so sure about that. He took a reluctant sip of his beer, and that was the last we said on the subject. He wasn't wrong about having some trouble hiring hands for the boat. A few men I spoke to turned me down outright when they saw my hull wasn't painted. Superstition. It was almost enough to make me delay heading out to just get that stupid paint job over with. But moving isn't cheap. I had expenses that took priority, and putting my boat out of commission for a few days to get that job done would have put me in a tighter spot than I was comfortable with. I was grateful that Scriver never pressed the issue,
and he thankfully knew where to find some young men who didn't think too hard about superstition. I had my crew within a few days, and it wasn't long before we were ready to head out. I honored my word for our first trip out, of course. As I made my way down to the harbor at dawn, I approached that moss-covered statue and laid some flowers at its base. The weathered face regarded me indifferently, its features almost invisible in the shadows of the dawn. Maybe it's silly, but I couldn't help but feel there was something slightly off as I laid the flowers at its feet. It was probably just in my head. I was letting Scriver's superstition get to me. Rationally, I knew there was no reason to feel anything towards the statue. It didn't change the fact that looking at it, I couldn't help but feel this deep, uneasy pit in my stomach, as if my guts were all tied up in knots. I stared back at that statue, then I backed away. Even with its eyes closed, I could have sworn that it was still watching me. It had to be my imagination, my own superstition taking charge. I tried not to dwell on it as I headed down to the docks to make the final preparations for our launch.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
We made it out to the open water with no issues. The sun was just rising as we sailed eastward into it, and I felt that familiar peace that always comes to me when I'm out on the water. It wasn't long before I forgot about the superstitions of Ash Bay. I had a good crew of men who were eager to work, and despite his superstitions, I trusted Scriver as a reliable second in command. He already wasn't letting me down. From the bridge, I could see him getting the men prepared to drop the nets once we were in deep enough water. Our first day out went about as well as it could have. When we pulled up our nets, they were absolutely teeming with fish. The crew spent the better part of the afternoon processing and packing our catch and ice. Rinse and repeat for the second day. I was anticipating being back home by the end of the week, and admittedly, the color of my hull was the furthest thing from my mind. I had no problems on these waters before. Why would I start having them now? Then came the third day. I knew something was wrong when we pulled in the nets. A full net has a heft to it. The sheer volume of fish is obvious once you start reeling it in. Likewise, an empty net comes in differently. There's no resistance, no weight to it. Considering how rich the waters had been before, I knew something was off. Both Scriver and I were on deck when the net got pulled in. The two boys he had hired were standing by, watching as the rope pulled it back aboard. Even before it had returned to the boat, I could see the problem. The net, or what was left of it, trailed through the water, floating on the surface like a dead thing.
"It must have snapped,"
I heard one of the boys say as we pulled it aboard.
"Maybe it caught on something underwater? A rock or something?"
Scriver stood beside me, dead silent, his brow furrowed. I didn't need to ask to know that he knew better. So did I.
"Could be,"
I said. Although as I looked at the torn end of the net, I couldn't help but feel that this had been no accident. The net appeared to have been cut open with a blade.
Sure, maybe it could have been an accident, but my gut told me otherwise. I looked out at the water. It was a gray day out, and the surface seemed almost black against the dreary sky. But for a moment in the distance, I swore I saw something moving. A splash as something large dove back down beneath the waves. I knew that Scriver saw it too. I looked over at him to see his eyes narrowed at the horizon, the tension in his posture almost palpable. He had seen what I'd seen, and something told me he knew what it was. Scriver came to me after supper to talk. He had been up in the wheelhouse enjoying a cigarette and bringing us a little further eastward. I'd had good luck in that area before. I expected to do so again.
"You got a moment?"
he asked, after knocking on the doorframe.
"Of course. What's on your mind?"
"I think it might be best to head back to Ash Bay. We've pulled in a decent haul. It should be enough for wages and bills. We can come back out once the hull is painted."
"Go back? Now? We're barely half full."
"And we're down a net. Look, I haven't pressed this issue. You're not a superstitious man, right? I can respect that. I'm not one for superstition myself. But I also don't ignore it when something clearly isn't right. I've been fishing these waters for 20 years now. I've seen things. I know when a trip is about to turn bad. I'm asking you as a friend, let's go home and paint the hull. Then we can come back out. If it's money you're worried about, I'll even forgo my wages for this trip."
This sort of plea sounded odd coming from the likes of him. Looking into his eyes, I could see an all too sincere concern. Part of me wanted to humor him, but the rest of me didn't understand his cause for concern.
"We can fix the net and cast it again tomorrow, but I don't see any point in going all the way back home."
He didn't like that answer. I knew he wouldn't.
"At the very least, can we go no further out?"
he asked, almost pleading with me.
"Call me crazy if you'd like, but I believe that if we venture too far from the land, we won't be seeing it again."
I bit my lip, but having already dismissed his concerns, I didn't have it in me to do so again. "I'll bring us closer to home," I promised, "but I won't head back. At least not until we've cast our nets tomorrow." That answer seemed to satisfy him, even if not completely. I saw him exhale a breath he had been holding before he nodded.
"All right. I suppose that's enough."
He hardly seemed satisfied, but he wasn't going to argue with me.
"Just stay close to home and don't keep us out much longer. I can't shake the feeling that we've worn out our welcome here."
He left without a further word, heading below deck to see to the crew. I almost asked him to stay so I could ask him what he meant. I wish I had. My eyes returned to the darkened horizon. The lights of the boat illuminated the black waters, and I almost thought I saw something bobbing among the waves. For a moment, it was gone when I tried to focus on it. We cast our nets again the next day. I'd held true to my promise to set a course closer to home. Ash Bay was visible in the distance. We weren't more than a few hours from home. I wasn't happy to be that close to land, but it seemed like an ideal compromise given Scriver's concerns. Regardless, the day carried on without incident. We brought in the first net after a few hours with no issues and received a generous haul for our troubles. We started hauling in the second net. Judging by the resistance, I knew it was probably full, and my high spirits almost made me forget about all that strangeness from yesterday. Maybe I would have forgotten them completely if it all didn't come rushing back mere moments later. As the net was pulled in, I could see the writhing of live fish inside it. It wasn't until we brought it around to empty it onto the deck that I noticed that there was something else in there. The sight of what looked to be a human arm jutting out of the side of the net made my heart skip a beat. My breath caught in my throat, as for a moment, I feared that we had just found the body. Maybe if I'd been faster, I could have stopped them from emptying the net. Then again, what good would that have done? The net was emptied, and its contents spilled all over the deck. Among the fallen bodies of fish, I saw something large and man-shaped tumble onto the deck among them. It hit the metal with a heavy thud, followed by an even heavier silence. Neither I nor Scriver nor the other men spoke as we looked at what lay among the mass of flopping, dying fish, although we could all see it clearly. I, for one, certainly didn't believe what I was seeing, but that did not make it any less real. From the waist up, she looked more or less like an ordinary woman. Her hair was long and tangled. Her skin was smooth and seemed as if it would have been soft to the touch, although it was riddled with deep cuts from the net. No doubt she had gotten them struggling to escape it. She had an athletic physique and small, bare breasts, although those were not what any of us were looking at. No, the eyes of every man on that boat were trained below her breasts. On her sides, beneath her arms, and between her ribs were several slits in her skin. They reminded me of the gills of a shark, and I imagine that's exactly what they were. Gills. Beneath her waist was a strong fin tail with silver scales that ended in a fluke, not unlike that of a whale, but far more delicate. She had no legs, only that tail. Never in all my years had I imagined I'd ever see a mermaid. I'd always thought they were nothing more than fairy tales, but what else could I have called that which sat before me other than a mermaid? A mermaid who was still alive, if only barely. Her eyes opened, and she seemed to look around at us. Her arms moved, although her motions were sluggish, weak. She seemed to gasp as she struggled to move. We just watched her, too in awe of her to think to help. Most of us were, anyway. One of the boys that Scriver had hired took a step towards her, and as he did, Scriver himself put out an arm to stop him.
"No," he cried. "Leave it. Let it die."
Those words snapped me out of my daze.
"Let it die,"
I repeated.
"We should help it."
"Believe me, if the stories I've heard about these things are true, then it would not care to do the same for us. Let it die,"
he said, although I could see him doubting his own words. The mermaid let out a growl of exertion before rolling herself onto her stomach. She looked up at us, teeth clenched in pain. Her teeth looked razor sharp, like a predator's teeth, not a human's. But if she meant to attack us, she didn't have the strength. Her body seemed to collapse again as she struggled to breathe. I could see fresh blood pooling underneath her. She was bleeding out.
"We should throw her overboard,"
I said.
"Come on. Let's just get rid of her then, before she dies."
Scriver remained still as I ran to help the mermaid. The crewmen joined me. Between us, we were able to pick the wheezing, dying mermaid up. She seemed to recoil from us at first, but she didn't have the strength to fight us off, even if she wanted to. We picked her up, and aside from a weak hiss of protest, She could do nothing but cling to one of the men for support. We brought her to the edge of the boat, and as we did, I saw the faces bobbing among the waves. Other mermaids. More than I could count. All of them were watching us, judging us for what we'd do next. The sight of them made me freeze for a moment before I remembered just what it was that we had set out to do. The mermaid we'd caught was dying, and maybe they could save her. I wish we could have been more gentle with how we had sent her back to her people. With bloody hands, we had tossed her overboard and let her fall back into the water, which turned red as she sank beneath it. I saw several other mermaids dive down after her, and after a few moments, they resurfaced, clutching their fallen comrade close. They looked at us before taking her back beneath the waves. It was the last time I saw her. The others lingered, though. They watched us intently, and I'd be lying if I said that their cold, inhuman stares did not send a chill through me. Behind me, I could hear Scriver approaching. He stared out into the sea of unforgiven faces, and I could sense the dread radiating off of him.
"I do not think that was the right call," he said softly. "Although, I don't know what would have been."
One by one, the faces began to disappear beneath the waves, until only one remained. It looked to be a young woman with long brown hair that bobbed around her head. She wore a wreath of reeds around her head, and her green eyes burned into me with an intensity that turned my stomach. From beneath the surface of the water, she raised an arm, and in her pale hand, she held an ornate weapon, an axe with a wide fan-like blade. She pointed it directly at me, almost as if uttering a threat, before she turned and sank down beneath the waves with her sisters. We were silent, with only the sounds of the ocean filling the air in the wake of what had just happened. It was Scriver who spoke first.
"We need to get back to shore. Now, before they come back."
He didn't wait for my permission. He didn't need to. Scriver made for the wheelhouse to steer us home, and I was grateful that he did. My hands were shaking. It took me a few moments to gather my thoughts enough to register what needed to be done. We didn't bother packing the bounty from the nets. If anything, we let the fish die and rot in the sun. We were a few hours from shore, and suddenly that seemed too far away. We kept a lookout on the water, but it didn't do us much good. When the attack came, it came from beneath us and so suddenly that I'm not even sure we could have prepared for it. As the boat sped homeward, it rocked suddenly as something struck the hull beneath us. I sent one of the men down to check on it, running as if the devil itself was on his tail.
"We're taking on water,"
he cried.
"Something tore a hole in us."
No sooner had the words left his mouth than the boat was hit again. This time it rocked hard enough to throw me off my feet. The engine seemed to sputter. In the wheelhouse, I could see a look of utter terror on Scriver's face. I wasted no time in running up to check on him.
"What's our condition?"
"Not good. I think something just damaged the engine. We're losing speed. In our current state, we might be able to limp home. Might. But when our state gets worse..."
"Damn it!"
I knew at that moment that the ship was going down. There wasn't a damn thing I could do to stop it. But maybe we didn't have to go down with it.
"Let's get the dinghies ready. Raise flares to signal for help. We're close enough to shore. Someone will see us."
Scriver nodded solemnly before I left them. I took the crewmen to get the dinghies. small inflatable things that wouldn't get us far. But given our circumstances, they were exactly what we needed. We hauled them to the front of the deck and got them inflated. As we did that, I felt another impact rock the boat. Scriver left the wheelhouse. I could see a flare gun in his hand, and he aimed it at the sky and fired. The flare arced up, and as it did, I told myself that we'd be okay. After that, everything was a blur. I remember the final impact that struck the boat. I remember that it threw me off my feet. I remember feeling the deck tilt beneath me as the boat began to list, but I never saw what tilted it. It couldn't have been the mermaids, could it? All I know is that one minute, I was sure that we were going home, and the next, the boat was tilting. I was falling, and when I landed, I was enveloped by the cold black waters of the ocean. I remember seeing some of the men in the water around me. I think Scriver was among them. I think he was the first one they grabbed. It was hard to see underwater. In the chaos, it was hard to be sure what was happening. But I'm sure that I saw Scriver just a few feet away from me the moment before a figure swam up from beneath him, grabbed him around the waist, and pulled him deeper under the water. Maybe it's just a trick of my memory, but I could almost swear I heard him screaming the entire time. I could see more of them coming, rising out of the blackness of the depths. I remember the panic in my chest as I tried to swim away. Looking up, I could see one of the dinghies was inflated. I could see the white pattern on the bottom of it, almost identical to the one the larger ships had. I didn't think about the mermaids. I didn't think about the crew. I just thought about the dinghy and swam upward until I felt my hand against the bottom of it. I pulled myself aboard and tried not to imagine the cold hands reaching out of the depths to pull me down. The flare was still in the sky when I broke the surface. It had reached its highest point and was coming down slowly. Someone had to have seen it. Ash Bay was close. They definitely would have seen it, right? God, I hoped I was right. I looked back at my boat, which had now capsized. From the dinghy, I could see deep gashes in the hull. Deeper gashes than could have been caused by weapons. But despite that, the waters around me were calm. Too calm. None of the crew surfaced around me. Neither did any of the mermaids, although I was still certain that I could see shapes moving beneath the surface of the water. Figures circled my dinghy, deciding whether or not to sink it. I prayed to whatever God would listen that they wouldn't do it. Maybe I got lucky that day. Maybe it was the markings on the bottom of the dinghy that dissuaded them. I can't say for sure. I was picked up by another boat about an hour later. By then, my boat had almost completely disappeared beneath the waves. They looked for my crew, but they never found them. I can't say I'm surprised. As they brought me back to Ash Bay, I couldn't help but look out at the waters behind us. Where my boat was sinking, I know I saw a single head rise above the water. I know that a pair of bitter green eyes watched me as I left. I still see those green eyes in my dreams every night. I left Ash Bay a few weeks later. I put the house I'd bought up for sale and cut my losses. It seemed the only sensible thing to do. I remember that as I drove out of town that last time, I passed by the harbor and took one final look at the statue they kept there. Just the sight of it sent a chill through me. Were I a braver man, maybe I would have taken a hammer to it in defiance of what it stood for. but I can only imagine that would have ended badly in one way or another, and I had no interest in continuing to tempt fate. I've been a fisherman for a very long time. It's what I know. All I know. I came to Ash Bay for that purpose, and I left with nothing. I don't know what I'll do now. I don't know where I'll go next. But I know that my days as a fisherman are over. I can never return to the ocean now. I've worn out my welcome. I know that they'll be waiting for me. She'll be waiting for me. Maybe I deserve whatever fate they'd bestow upon me. Maybe I'm a coward for avoiding it. Maybe. Maybe.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
And that was I Can Never Return to the Ocean by author Ryan G. Peacock. A good reminder when and when not to mind your local catch and release laws. Hell, it all looks the same once you put it through the fish stick machine. A little about the author. Ryan G. Peacock is allegedly an author based in Ontario, Canada. After hearing about the No Sleep subreddit back in 2018, he thought it sounded like fun and promptly stopped sleeping. His unhinged ravings from the resultant madness have been featured on the No Sleep podcast, Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and Creepy. Thanks, Ryan.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I guess this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend. And if you miss me out there, visit patreon.com/drewblood and come hang out with us for a while. Did I mention I've got mugs? Stickers for your trapper keeper. T-shirts, global shipping included. No, hell, anyway, may the wind be at your back and may the road rise up to meet you. Have a happy Easter, everyone, and until we meet again, go fuck yourselves.
Good night, y'all.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.